Alrighty. Well, it's another wonderful episode of the Vox Cascadia podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. You know, I like to think, Chuck, that we're relatively intelligent gamers. You know, we play a lot of things like Kill Team and Warhammer, and, you know, we're not, like, experts, but, you know, they're pretty intense games. I've been trying Age of Empires 2, and holy shit, nothing tires me out quite as much as that game. My God. We'll just keep it brief, because we have a wonderful special guest, our dear friend Zach, joining us. Hello, Zach. But yeah, that game, doing, like, one game of it, like, exhausts me in a way I don't think I've felt since, like, you know, running a mile in high school type shit.
Like just, like, an actual mile? I mean, a swimmer. You had a
Yeah, app, true. Dude. I don't know. I just, listen, it's just, bro, that game hurts my brain in a way that is so fun, though, because it's, like, all I want to do is get better at it now. But it genuinely tires me out because there's just so much shit you got to do. I've never really played RTSs before, and I don't know how people do this.
You should really play Beyond All Reason. That's like an amazing RTS that's actually open source. So it's actually like made pro bono by a bunch of people contributing to the open source project. And ooh, it is the best cool. RTS. All the people who retired from making RTSs because they like made enough money and they just like dabble, they now contribute to Beyond All Reason. It is amazing.
I don't have the brain power to do RTSs. Like StarCraft 1 was like the peak. Like I can't do anything beyond that. I just, yeah, no, I need like shooters or like Hades 1 has been my jam lately. I finally actually like finished the story. So, Connor, I'm glad to hear that you're Age of Empires 2? Is that what you said?
Age of Empires 2. That's like, I randomly got a YouTube guy, who commentates on it. T90. If anyone that plays AOE 2 probably knows him. And then it turns out a bunch of my friends also were getting into it at the same time. And so my friend, also named Connor, bought me the game. And I finally downloaded it and played it. And yeah, it's great. But my brain is mush from trying it this weekend.
All right. Speaking of something that's going to make your brain mush, we've got a new box coming out this week. Shadow Hunt. Kill Team Shadow Hunt. The last box of Kill Team. There's ever. Nothing after this ever. It's the Murder
the
Wing.
The only box of Kill Team.
The only box of Kill Team.
Everything's just been tutorial up into this point, or like, and, you know, this has been the prequels.
And we have on the podcast the winner of the Voxies for Slight Schoolgirl Fetish, if you remember that one. Yeah, I don't know if it was in poor taste, but Connor said we had to do it. So
you were the one that came up with it.
Bro, come on. Like, this was all you. So yeah, but we have Zach, disregarding dice himself, the one who, like, the novitiate's master, the sanctifier dabbler, and now the new Celestine Insidian main, who's gonna like bring us through this team. This is gonna be a deep dive, medium dive. Like, Zach, the rules just came out a couple days ago.
Yeah, this will be how to play, and mostly, maybe the most important thing, how to go through turning point one, because there's actually quite of it's very intricate to set this team up for success in turning point one. So that's where we're going to start, and we're going to start how do you get through turning point one, setting yourself up for success, as we all learn, including me, how to play turning points two through four later.
All right. Well, and I mean, Zach, you've, like, since the last time we talked to you, we talked to you a little bit after the Sanctifiers, got a little bit of a nerf. And we're recording this on Tuesday. Probably the balanced data slate is going to come out tomorrow, and Sanctifiers are going to get a huge buff, and you're going to want to go back to them. No?
Never in my life. That team is dead to me. Sorry. What team?
You've been on a world tour since then, though. You went to Europe. You went to Atlanta for the Worlds. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you're back here in the Pacific Northwest, and you're gonna walk us through this. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, easy best in faction for Sanctifiers at Worlds, as I'm the only one that showed up with them, and nice. Did not bad.
Hey, you gotta show up. You gotta show up to win, right? So
yeah, exactly. Pretty easy to check in first day and get.
I don't know. I saw you on the squad game stream, and you were, that was a good game. I really enjoyed that, actually. So you're representing for the Northwest, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, okay, so should we just get into some Celestian Insidience? I don't know how to pronounce that. I believe Insidience, right?
Yeah, well, tell us about this team. Connor and I are both Kitbash and a Murder Wing team. I'm doing Loyalist Murder Wing. Connor's doing Iron Warriors Murder Wing.
Yeah, speaking of Iron Warriors, they got some cool stuff. Woo, thank God.
So what are we going to be facing off against?
All right, well, it won't really matter if you're playing that team. But this is their box partner, which is the Celestians. And, man, can we just start with the best part of the team, which is the models? Like, I have kitbashed a lot of different teams looking for the sisters feel. Even in Kill Team 2024 and the sisters team that exists before that was based on the sisters squad from 40K. They're fine models, but they're not heroic models. And then we had Novitiates, which are literally gals in training, and they have jorts. And I'm not going to say anything other than that. This team fulfills your fantasy of having the most dope sisters with the most dope armor and holding all of the cool stuff. The models are impeccable. I cannot wait.
Yeah, I was actually your Novitiates team was fully kitbashed, amazing. And I was talking to you about it before they even came out. I was like, hey man, you kitbashing these up? And you're like, no. I love the models. These are my models.
I don't know. I have a website. On the website, there are pictures of kill teams. It was one of like the many Novitiate kill team pictures that went around. Maybe, possibly, in some world, the sculptor at GW saw my kill team kit bash and decided to do this. Because it's almost like, look, I did an okay job getting little bits together. The GW sculptors just did what I had envisioned the whole time. They did an amazing job. Like, gosh, they have such talent there, and they nailed sisters like every single piece on the models. I cannot wait.
Yeah, it's
they're good models. It's nice to properly have sisters in power armor with like actual unique rules rather than just being the compendium team from 5 years ago.
And three up saves.
Yeah. Nine wounds, which is oh so good.
Yeah. So with that said, you know, I finally get my team as if I like kidnapped a GW sculptor and then made him sculpt me a team. this is what the models would look like. Great. And then I figured we just kind of go through their rules. So stop me if you have any questions, but I figured we start with their faction equipment, their faction rules. And then we'll kind of go over to team selection, their one box build, and we'll get into specific operatives. So I say the first... let's get their team rule out of the way that doesn't really matter, which is the anti-psycho rule. So here's a fun fact. Since the new edition dropped, two models have been printed with the psycho keyword. If you had to guess two models out of all models since the new edition, what percentage of released models have the psycho keyword?
Since the new edition, I would say 5.
Nice. 5%? I mean, Sanctifiers have two people with psychic, I think. No, I don't know. Really? The Miraculous doesn't have any
psychic? She does miracles. It doesn't count as a psyker. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to say 1%. There's got to be at least one model.
You're close. It's 1.7% of models. So, so this isn't a rule. I mean, we'll touch on it, but this means nothing, right? It doesn't actually come up. It's not worth talking about. And that's okay because it's not very, very considered. But yeah, Chuck, go ahead.
There's a lot of drama online about people who are like, this is like killing teams. I'm like, you're killing Warp Coven who got murdered.
Who are already dead, you know?
Yeah. There's a lot of people like, and I think, I mean, personally, I think that this shows that the way they're going to build teams in the future is maybe you have like a psyker, you have like a single people are like, oh, there's the leader of the Nemesis Claw. Like, okay, if you get within 3 inches of them, you're screwed. But
generally Nemesis Claw leader is sitting in the back to like the start of turn three. Anyways, you're generating command points with that guy. You're not fighting till everyone else is dead type of deal.
Yes. Use your pitchforks and torches for something else, kids. It's not about the psychic.
Where's a cool ad mech team?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
It's called Battleclade, buddy.
I said cool for a reason, Chuck. Sisters.
Another fun thing. So the psychic keyword on all models released this edition are optional to take. So even if this was the craziest rule, there's no reason any team printed in third edition would ever field a Psyker, because none of them have to. And that's what it feels like. So
a third of their like faction rules don't even do shit right now.
Yeah, right. It's not accounted for, but so, okay. So what does it do? Cool. For the 1.7% of operatives it matters for. If you get within
What is the operative? What's that?
Yeah, one? There are two. So one kind of barely counts, and that is the plague caster on plague marines.
Okay.
And then the other is the wolf scout rune caster or whatever we call
it. Oh, get dodge.
Rune priest. Yeah.
Rune priest. So this is the only scold. Two psykers, and they're both optional. You just not take
them.
Anywho, so if you get within three, they can't do psychic actions. You can never be targeted or damaged by a psychic action. And then if you're fighting them, any psychic keyword weapons lose all of their special rules and go to 3-4. That's probably more important than the other thing we'll talk about, which is you get lethal 5 when shooting or fighting them. And so that's the biggest thing. One interesting thing is the Condemner on the Novitiate team had this had Anti-Psyker as well. And that Anti-Psyker operative on Novitiates can actually kill in combat a Warp Coven sorcerer if they don't bring the Kapesh. So fighting psykers is pretty good, but that won't really come up. It's better than shooting psykers, surprisingly, but that really won't come up. So that's one. All right, that's kind of out of the way, won't come up much. I'd say the biggest effect on the meta this has is Brood Brothers cannot brain blast you while in combat using the Magus. That's probably the most important interaction for this team. Other than, I mean, fighting 5 operative Warp Coven is nothing. Yeah. All right, moving on to real faction rules. Inspiration. So our gals, they are bringing the Emperor's Light wherever they go. How does that happen? They become inspiring. They do great deeds, and essentially the Emperor shines upon them. So what is the buff? When an operative is inspiring, they get severe. That's awesome. So if they roll, they get that. A lot of ploys that you won't think, and a lot of abilities that you won't think actually care about inspiring. So most of the abilities and most of the ploys we'll go over, you have to be inspired. So that's really important. Because you might think these operatives always have this, but that's not really the case. And that'll change how much you want to be charging and how offensive you want to be for the gals. So either there are 5 ways to get inspiring, but the faction rule has 2 of them. So we're going to go over that right now. One, you incapacitate an enemy operative with more than 6 wounds at any point. All right, kill a person. The other one, and this is probably the most popular way you'll get inspiring, is just performing a charge. If you charge, you get inspiring. Doesn't matter when you charge, doesn't matter who you charge. No, if you are charging, you are inspired. This is maybe the first little fun interaction here where you can imagine, let's say Canoptic Circle puts out a warrior on the midpoint because they just want to do some mission. They're like, okay, go kill my warrior now. You know, here's my 8 wound dude. Just go kill him, and then we'll continue the game. And you're like, or what if 5 operatives charge them? What if instead of killing a little person, like your little operative, you just inspire half the team? Because all you need to do is charge. And it doesn't matter if it's multi-charge, doesn't matter if they're already in combat, doesn't matter how many wounds they have remaining, none of that matters. So that's inspiration. It turns on. The buff is severe. More importantly than severe, though, most of the things that we talk about require the operatives to be inspiring. Any questions about that before we move on to the next one?
No, good.
No, that makes sense. I didn't even think about the fact, yeah, that like you can just charge the same guy that maybe moved up turn 1 or turn 2, and now everyone's inspired. That's really good, yeah.
Yeah, kind of wild. Okay, the next one is martyrdom, and unfortunately it comes with a spreadsheet. I'm sorry. I guarantee you, though, the spreadsheet is pretty easy, okay? It's nothing like the Novitiate spreadsheet. It's doable. It's even better than the Blood Tank spreadsheet. Okay, so Martyrdom, key part of Sisters. Okay, we when Sisters die, they you know, through their penance, grant benefits to other people in their squad, and their sacrifice means something, right? And so whenever an inspired operative is incapacitated, they hand out a benediction. What does that mean? When a lady who did a cool thing dies, you get a buff. All right. Now you have to be, and this is very important, either visible or within six. And so a lot of people first read this and they're like, oh shoot, they're gonna have to like stay clumped up as they move forward. They just need visibility. You can be 27 inches away. As long as the operatives can see each other, then you're okay. And so what happens when you die while inspired? You get four different benedictions. I'm just going to go over them as they're printed, and then I'll say roughly how good they are. So the first benediction, called Ador, you get an APL for the rest of the game. You go from 2 APL to 3 APL rest of the game. The superior can't get this because she already has 3 APL and she can't go up to 4, turns out. But with that said, this is probably either the first or second best benediction that we'll be doing. Next, Wrath. Wrath is, until the end of the battle, weapons on the operative's data card had ceaseless. So that means it doesn't work for crack grenades, sorry to say, but everything on your data card gains ceaseless. This is either the first or second best benediction. Then we get into things that are somewhat more niche. Other one is Restoration. You heal D3 plus 2 lost wounds. And the last one is Exigent, where you can either perform a charge or dash of 3 inches, but you got to end closer to the lady that died. Now, closer to the lady that died part is important because there is a way to hand out a benediction. Right now, we do not know, though currently probably raw, you can't move with Exigence unless an operative has died. So if you get a free benediction, you probably do not get to do this little dash. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so because there is other ways to get a benediction, you can you're going to get to it, but you can remove the inspiring. One person can remove inspiring to get, put a benediction on someone else, but if there's no dead operative, you can't use that Exigence. So, yeah, right?
Exactly. Maybe is the answer to that question. Probably. Maybe. I would play that way until we know more, is what I would say to that one. So taken together, inspiring and martyrdom, what do those rules mean? It roughly means that you want to be trading if you can on the team, as when you die, you're only net oftentimes minus one APL, or you're improving your data card, your data sheets, weapons. So either you're getting more APL and you're losing less than your opponent when they lose an operative, or you're buffing someone to a point where they're going to be able to kill so much better that the APL differential actually isn't even as good as just killing more people.
I was going to say, like, real quick before you, when you're passing this out, do you think that it would be like maybe if somebody, say the visible operative is in the back line or something, you're going to rather than do the ceaseless if they're, because most of the weapons are pretty short range, right? You probably pass out the third APL so they can get up the board quicker.
I'd say that generally your melee operatives are going to get Wrath, and generally your shooting operatives might get the third APL, but they can also benefit from the ceaseless. But usually you're going to be doing both in a turn, and it's kind of dependent. It'll be very rare to have a game where you only give Wrath, and very rare to have a game where you only give Ardor for the 3 APL. You'll probably mix them, and probably the ones with the guns, they get 3 APL. The ones with only the weapons, they get better rolls.
There's nothing that says you can't be double martyred, is there?
Mm-mm. Okay. You can have more than one martyr. Yeah, that is correct. Okay. So that's faction equipment. So we're trying to play like a tradey, defensive, somewhat game. And the more we do that often, the better we do. Ploys. So let's go ahead. I'll go into equipment first, usually, because it's a really interesting one. So just as they're printed, I believe the first one is Psych Out Grenade. This is an interesting one where essentially you can choose this equipment You can choose smokes, and those stun grenades. And those stun grenades on a 3-up also deal the same amount of D3 damage. So you can deal 2 to 3 damage on a successful stun. And then if you're a psyker, you take D6 damage. So go up to 6 damage on a stun.
So that those two operatives.
Yeah, those two operatives. wild, man. Like, just the D3 damage on a stun is real, real good. Deceptively great for breakpoints. You can imagine Hearthkin Salvagers taking 2, going to 6. The damage reduction means nothing. Goremongers taking 2 means they can die in a shot.
Yeah.
A lot of Space Marines going to 11. I mean, 11's a much better breakpoint than 14. And so, like, this changes a lot of breakpoints. Stuns are still great, and they do damage. But this is something you'll take a lot of the time, unless your enemy might ignore stuns. Then you probably skip this one. Then we have...
Real quick on that, though. Like, if even if they ignore stuns, you could still get the damage off. Maybe not worth it, but...
Yeah. Yeah, you might start considering, I think I might start considering like ladders or razor wire or something. If they're not Murder Wing. If it's Murder
Wing, we're playing
Wing,
Murder Wing. Stuns, we don't need razor wire.
yeah. Where we're going, we don't read terrain rules. Okay, so I believe the next one is the Vortifecta Mortis. This is good. I would recommend, personally, not playing with it for your first 5 to 10 games with the gals, because you should learn the faction rules, and this helps you skirt a faction rule. And what that means is, normally, when a gal dies and they're inspired, they either have to be 6 or visible. With this equipment, believe it's once per battle, that inspiring operative can put a bid addiction somewhere, anywhere. This sounds, some equipment is, I don't know my faction rule, and sometimes I make mistakes. This is not that. Because there are particular instances where you will want to hand out benedictions to very specific operatives in very specific places when they die. For instance, you might want to push a left flank on Tombworld and then give a third APL to the right. And that is something that's literally not possible without this faction equipment. So it allows for a level of finesse that isn't allowed with your normal faction rule. So this one can be juiced, or like you can find value out of it. It's not just like I don't know my faction rule, so I took this.
Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because if you have to be visible or within 6, and if you're in close quarters and you can't see someone, you can still take advantage of that that inspired Celestine to give someone martyrdom. Where normally you might just like they die fizzles. In a hallway.
Yeah, it just fizzles, or you're already winning that hallway. You know, sometimes you set up in Tomb World specifically. Very often there are like 3 kind of lanes, and maybe you already won your lane, or maybe you undercommitted to your lane, so you know you're going to lose. And moving that benediction to another lane, not possible without this relic. So it matters, or faction.
Speaking of relics, let's talk about saintly relics.
Yeah,
ooh, so saintly nice relics. Transition, Chuck.
So this one's real good. This saintly relics is just a scratch, and it's real good, just a scratch. It's arguably better than the ploy, just a scratch, and it's certainly better than the just a scratches we see that are equipment where you get to choose them. Why? So the just a scratches we get in equipment normally is once a battle. This one's twice a battle. I'll just read through it and I'll talk about the value. How about that? So whenever an attack dice would inflict damage on a friendly, you know, operative. So attack dice, not a normal attack dice. So criticals work here.
Nice.
You can use this rule. If you do, roll 1d6, or importantly, 2d6 if that operative is inspiring. any result of a six, ignore the damage from that attack dice. Okay, so you have a 33% chance on, or sorry, am I 33? Am I getting that right? Yeah, I think so. 33% chance on two dice, roughly. It's a little worse than that, but still good. To get a six and ignore damage. You cannot ignore more than one attack dice per action and two attack dice per battle. What matters here is this can happen twice in a single turn. And normally just scratches can either happen once a battle or they can happen once a turn. And so this team has a particular value to them where if nothing happens turning point two, and then you start to turn on the gas turning point three, and all of the killing happens two and three, you get more value on the back half of the game. You kind of condense that value from the just a scratch point later in the game. And so because of that, Saintly Relics is actually incredibly good if you can like stall and then turn on the engine later in the game.
Plus, the longer you stall, the more likely you have inspired operatives. So you're rolling, you know, double amount of dice. That's that equipment, I saw that. I was like, you know, it's still a chance, but that's a really good chance for a really powerful piece.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can stop crits. And so normally right now we see in the rules, if you have to roll for just a scratch, it can stop a crit. So it's kind of in line. All right, last one, auto flag relator. And this is a pretty contentious equipment at the moment. Pretty much whenever an operative's activated, you can use this rule. If you do, inflict D6 damage on the operative on a 4+, or sorry, D3 damage on the operative. On a 4+, that operative becomes inspiring, and you can't make more than one gal inspiring once a turn. This is rough because you can roll a 3, take 2 damage, and nothing happens. And with gals with only 7 wounds, 2 damage down to 7 is wild, man. Absolutely wild. The breakpoints kind of stop working a lot of the time at that. And so is it really worth inspiring? Some consternation. I think if you're taking this, you're essentially doing it on your operatives that will never fight. So if you have an operative that will never, ever fight, you can consider taking the auto flagellator. But like, man, you have 3 other equipment. Those are pretty good. You also need to somehow fit in probably barricades, maybe ladders, you know, razor wire. So auto flagellator probably first on the chopping block. Though if you know in very specific instances where you're not going to be taking a lot of damage and you just need the inspiring, I mean, it is a way to get more inspiring, which is great.
Anytime you go with the flagellation, it always like, I think about like, it was a Dan Brown book. It was a Tom Hanks movie. It was like big. No, it wasn't big. I just think about I think it was Angels and Demons or something where like the guy starts off with the thing on his calf, or his, not his calf, his thigh, where he's like repenting or whatever. So that's the only thing I can think of when I think of that. So I'm not going to take
Da Vinci
that.
Code.
It was the Da Vinci Code?
It was the Da Vinci Code. Angels and Demons is the same series, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, all right. So no autoflagellation. So where are we going next, Zach?
All right. So overall, you know, what I would say is your first games with the team is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take Psychrack Grenades. I'm going to take Saintly Relics. I'm not going to take the Victrola Mortis because I want to learn the faction rule, and that's a great way to do that. And I'm not going to take the auto flagellators because they seem really bad unless something is very specific, and I am not a good enough player with the team to know when that is yet. Also, fun fact, flagellator is missing an L, so it's not a real word, and it is certainly a typo. Okay. On to strategic ploys. Okay. So the strategic ploys on the team are pretty good. 2 are much better than the other 2. So you're just going to get to the good 2, all right? And then you can stop listening to me for a little bit as I kind of drone on. So the first one that's good because you'll get it for free, so you should listen to it because it'll be free a lot of the time, is suspect and eliminate. So select one enemy operative or marker. If you select an enemy operative, that operative and each other enemy operative visible within 2 gain a suspicion token until the end of the turning point. And if you selected a marker, each enemy operative contesting that marker gains one of your suspicion tokens until the ending of the turning point. So what that was, I mean, anyone with a suspicion token, you get punishing against. Punishing no longer works with severe. This most likely was a change after the team was developed, as it's a bit of a nombo, right? A non-combo with their faction rule. That said, punishing is still good. Punishing is still a real, real good rule. And most of the time you play this, you will get it for free. Some things here to consider. If you select a objective, everyone within the objective will get your punishing token. Since it's a marker, it does not have to be an objective, and it does not have to be an operative. It can be a smoke grenade, as smoke grenades are a marker. So you could smoke grenade someplace on the board, assume there's like a gaggle of five operatives, and they all get punishing. Can also work with plant banner and other missions. Also works with enemies mission markers as well. So pretty broad use of where you can put your suspicion tokens. You might find some funny plays to find a lot of operatives out. And then, honestly, this is kind of the bread and butter of the team. You know, a lot of people say this next strategic ploy, Holy Resilience. Some people say, oh, it's a sign that power creep is real. It's also just what a melee team needs. So even with a 9-wound breakpoint for most of the operatives, a melee team, which is what the operatives kind of focus on majorly, can't really work if you can ever be two-shot. If you have a team that consistently gets killed in two melee hits, then they can be a good team, but they can't be a good melee team. Just how the math works, because so many teams have things like just a scratch, parry first, damage reduction, any number of things. Frenzy exists. Goremongers exist. Like, there are a lot of good melee tricks, and so you can't die in two hits. And Holy Resilience is this team's answer to not die in two hits like all of the other melee teams. So whenever an inspiring friendly operative is fighting or retaliating, normal damage and critical damage of four or more inflict one less damage. So damage reduction, min three in fighting.
Yeah, this is really good, because one of the most common melee profiles I can think of is like a chainsword equivalent with four or five. And with nine wounds, that's really damn good, because... now that chainsword goes to 3-4, so even with five dice, there's possibility of you parrying your way out of that. It's that ploy I read that, I was like, holy shit, that's good. That's one of the better ploys I've seen in the game, because the fact it affects both normals and crits is genuinely nuts. It means a power weapon doesn't guarantee a kill unless it, you know, it has two crits, which is nice, to say the least.
Pretty nice, yeah. And this is like, you know, on other teams, on other melee teams, this would be Goremonger's blood tank, or sorry, Goremonger's ignore the first, you know, have the first damage. This would be Harkin Jaeger's have the first hit. This would be Frenzy, like Felgor's, like, you know, don't die when you die, right? Yeah. This is the stand-in for those teams that need something extra in melee to focus on that aspect a little more. And it is great. I think it's on par. It's good enough to hang with the other melee teams. And so we're not, like, lacking. And it's an amazing play.
And it's not the first dice. It's all dice, right?
Yeah, correct.
That's real good.
Yeah. Okay. Then some other ones that are okay. Okay, we're past the two good ones into the kind of okay ones. You play them sometimes. Wrathful Determination. Whenever you're getting shot, if you're on engage, reroll defense dice. All right, cool. I don't know. CP probably does the same thing much of the time.
It feels expensive for a benefit that requires a decent amount of setup, especially considering you have a 3-up save. I'd rather just save the command point and use it for a command point if you really
need it. It's pretty good on Rekka's. I really enjoy being able to reroll that on
Yeah, but you're also on a 5-up save on Rekka's, so you need to be rerolling a lot more than when a 3-up.
I mean, dice do be dice.
I think this one's a little expensive for the benefit.
I would say if you have a, like, if you're like, you know, turning point three or four, turning point four, and you have more majority people already on engage to start, mm-hmm. and you're going to get lit up, I think it's good.
I think it's situational. Yeah. And is nothing compared to the other two. It's as... take all the time.
To give like a simple rule that's not true all the time, if you expect to get shot three times, use this ploy. Yeah. If you expect to get shot less than three times, don't use it. Right. And that's like roughly it. I think this team probably want to be cagey. You're probably waiting until the end to do stuff. At least hopefully that's the plan A most of the time. Eh, you may use this, you may not. It's in the strongly okay, not bad, but strongly okay strategic play.
I think it's nice to have in the bag, though.
Very true. It could be far worse.
You got Zach Scala being shot. Like, are you going to be shot three times? Yes. Are you going to be shot two times or more or less? No.
Yeah.
It's like exactly. The Vicky Mendoza scale, but for shooting.
Yeah. This next one, maybe I'm bad or this ploy is bad is a statement I would make. But this is suffering and sacrifice. I don't know. I couldn't seem to find a way this works. But whenever a wounded friendly Insignian operative is shooting or fighting against or retaliating against an enemy operative, its weapons have the balanced weapon rule.
It feels like a wildly situational thing where if you maybe get hit by like in the Recommind, if you hit by like the Pulsa or like you like a lot of people got chipped or something, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah,
a big grenade blast or something. But like you're trying to avoid that. It seems like a, hey, I'm going to use this turn point four because I have five operatives on the board and three of them are missing HP. So it's just free rerolls.
Yeah, and generally the team punishes you for playing with operatives that are wounded. What do I mean by that? You want your inspired operatives to be dying to trade value to get your benedictions back. And so like the plan is operatives go in, get their value, and then die to get more value so you can go keep going, right? And so if you're sitting around, and this has happened to me in one game, turning two, not enough stuff died. Nothing died. And I was like, wait, what do you mean nothing died? It's like, oh, everything was just like kind of a pillow fight. It was weird dice. So you didn't die. I didn't die. And I was like, all right, but my faction rule, that's bad for me. That's actually really bad for me. And so I don't know if this really works. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe as I play more, I might learn more. But this is the last on the rank here for strategic plays. All right. Firefight ploys. Well, I'll start with, I guess, like what I think is the best. I think the best one here is, I want to make sure I get this right. Yeah, Glory to the Martyrs. Excuse me. This is awesome. It's any operative can strike on death. And if they kill to strike on death, they become inspiring so they can pass a benediction. I mean, striking on death is amazing.
Yeah.
Getting a martyrdom is amazing. Like, by any other name, how the faction rules work on this team, this is actually just a scratch. I know that sounds weird, but Glory to the Martyrs most of the time will feel as though you're playing just a scratch because you want your operative dead, you want to pass the benediction, and you want to do your damage. And so this is like all part of the plan here, and it creates that engine of like, oh, sure, you killed a gal, but now this one has 3 APL or ceaseless. So let's keep going.
Also, you lost the person doing it. So was it really that worth it for you? You've only benefited me here.
Yeah. So you could honestly use this three times a game. Like this could happen every single turning point. You'd be happy to use it. Yeah. Let's see. Fervent Hate is probably the next one. They're all pretty good firefight ploys, but we're just going in order of like what I think is best. Fervent Hate is... use this firefight ploy after rolling your attack dice. If you're fighting for something that doesn't have the Imperium keyword, you get ceaseless. If it's a Chaos or Psyker, so you know, happen to have those on their data sheet, then you get relentless. Relentless, three up? Sure.
Yep, that's a sure. Very good, like, shit, I've rolled terribly, and I can get out of jail free if I'm fighting, you know, Murderwing or Chaos Space Marines, Plague Marines.
It's just better command point reroll.
Yeah.
It's just better command point reroll. And command point reroll is a great way to use CP, and so is Fervent Hate sometimes. Next, these become a little, what's the word I want to use? Situational, but they're both can be a lot of value. I'm going to talk about the more flashy one because it's fun. So the more flashy one is Faith and Fury. Use this firefight ploy when you're fighting and you strike an enemy operative in that sequence with a crit. After resolving that strike, inflict D3 damage on each other enemy operative visible and within two. So you don't get to do D3 damage to the person you're fighting. Just a lot of people have gotten that wrong. That would be a cool ploy. That's not what this ploy is. It's everyone else visible and within two if they're an enemy. Note that the friendly operative would become inspiring if any enemy operatives with a wound stat of six or more are incapacitated as a result. All right, so just deal. I mean, honestly, this can be, if you're charging into an enemy's line and you kind of think you're throwing away an operative, let's imagine for a moment, like a bunch of Brood Brothers are like hiding behind a vantage and there are like four of them back there. And they're like, we have more operatives than you. You can't possibly trade better than we can. Like, just come into my lines. You're like, all right, I charge, I deal D3 to four operatives, and then I kill this one. Like, it's a good, like, horde breaker up, like, thing. Yeah, pretty good. Essentially, like, a blast on a charge, I guess another way to think about it. It's D3, but still pretty good.
Reap from any Kill Team 21 veterans.
Oh, my God. Jeez. It is real. Oh my. Okay, I'm never gonna unsee that. Oh man,
I like that keyword. I'm kind of sad it's gone.
All right, and then Unshakable Pursuit is our last one. Also good. All of these are playable. They're kind of what do you call it? Situational. This one, yeah, we'll talk about it. Okay, so use this firefight play during an activation before it performs an action until or like so you can use a mid activation if you want. Until the end of that operative's activation, you can ignore any changes to its move stat. If that operative is inspiring, add one to its move stat. If that operative becomes inspiring by performing the charge action, you can use this ploy before it moves again for additional movement. Essentially, like, if you're within charge range, you can use Unshakable to extend to complete the charge. You don't need to be inspired before that happens, if that makes any sense. So, like, you know, normally they charge eight. You can make them charge nine with Unshakable Pursuit. And it also ignores movement stat changes, which is pretty big.
I've seen a lot of like elf people complain about this because they want to have you outside of their being charge range. But now this changes it because now you can mess up that like nine inch charge that the Trixie elves have.
Yeah.
Suck it, elves.
Suck it, elves. That's all I got. Filthy Xenos, I guess, is what I would say that. It's really good. You don't always need it. In the games you can play without it, it's probably a little better. But it'll make some matchups real, real good, like the elf matchup. If you need one inch and you happen to be inspiring and you need to make it onto a point, this also works. Like, God, there's a bunch of different
inch.
Okay. What do you mean?
It's a wiener joke.
Oh, got it. Yeah. All
right.
Comedy.
Yeah, so those are the ploys and the equipment. What does that set us up for? After reading the faction equipment, we know we want to be trading to get value as ladies go in, they die, they come out. As we read our ploys, we have a little clearer idea of like we want to be fighting in melee a lot of the time because we have damage reduction. We also have our strike on last, so we want to be doing that as much as we can. Essentially, there's a lot of good melee stuff here, and so we're really being pushed, even before we see any of the operative cards. This is a melee team that wants to be dying and passing benedictions. That's the idea. Any questions before? I think we'll move on to operatives from here.
Nothing from
me. No, I think you've outlined it really nicely, and yeah, I think, yeah, let's move into the operatives.
Okay, so operatives, first we'll start with the superior. So the superior, some hot takes. Again, I'm only a few games in here, so like we'll learn more. But the superior is not your traditional leader. Does not fight better than most of your other operatives. And while this does have an Inferno pistol, which like can get up close and do dev too, so kind of your only melt on the team, not really how you want to use her either. This leader is a rare leader that is a support piece. Why? They have a great relic contender stake thrower that is always silent. Four dice, three up, 2/2. Wait, I'm not done. Here come the crazy rules. Devastating 2, lethal 5, piercing 1, silent anti-psyker. All right. even a 2-2 weapon profile can be good if you add enough keywords. So that stake thrower is really good. It's a great way to chip teams. And even elites have to really fear this model in your back lines, looking for shots downfield. And so while you might initially read this model as being someone who wants to get up there, use the Inferno Bolt Pistol, or even fight, even though literally her mace is worse than a lot of the other melee things, surprisingly, she's going to be, I think, a lot of time in the back lanes using her stake thrower to keep people honest, and then using her spiritual mentor to give someone inspiring. You have to be constantly sending out inspiring with her, at least turn one, almost certainly turn two. You should probably doing it turn three. You don't need to. You probably want to do it turn four, but you can probably win without doing that. But like at least for three turns, most of the time your plan is going to be spending an APL to give out inspiration to someone. And then either from there, shooting someone to keep them honest, or advancing up the board or doing something like that.
It kind of does feel like the Inferno Pistol is a trap, because like it looks nasty, but also like, yeah, if you can silent 2-2 dev 2, like that's really nice.
Plus just add balance to every keyword she's got. A silent with balanced hitting like that is good, because you know her passive is for the free command point reroll once per turn is pretty damn useful.
Yeah, she also gets a, or even better, you know, technically you can be using the
oops, reroll everything if I need to type of thing.
Yeah, exactly. So you can just fish for fives, because it's also lethal five, which is wild. So real good, surprising. She has 3 APL, so most of the time the 3 APL, she's just going to feel like a normal sister while doing spiritual mentor. Sorry, you don't, like, it's not a real 3 APL model, I don't know what to tell you. It's kind of like a... what's the scout leader? Like technically 3 APL, but one's always spent giving out one.
Yeah.
Next, we have the sensor. And so this is the Mace Lady. 4 attacks, 4+, 5/5 brutal shock anti-psyker. And then she has a Null Aura. That Null Aura is an injury aura by any other name. There's no difference. Null Field essentially starts at 1 inch. She can do a ritual every turn to extend it by an inch. Your plan A for this is to use it twice. Then it gets interesting. You probably want to use this turn one. You want to use it turn two. And then you have to think about whether or not you want to use it turn three or four. We'll talk about how she builds a castle, but she is a piece to build a melee castle in the center of the board, which is how we're going to want to start turning point one. But she's a key piece. So everyone has a 3-up save. She's 9 wounds. Leader is 10 wounds. Abjurer, hey, this is the second piece of our wall. This is important. She is subductor, but better is how I would. I guess like mix a subductor. And what's the shield operative on the breachers?
I know what you're talking shield about. I don't know the name off the top of my head. Sorry.
Yeah. Players. All good. But the Breacher Shield and an Abjurer from Exaction. And this is, or sorry, Abjurer, whatever. The Subductor from Instruction. And you got the Incidient Abjurer. She has 2 different weapon profiles. They're both melee profiles, and she has to pick between them. They are both 4 dice, both 3 up, both 4-6. You either pick between Shield, which is when you parry twice, or Lethal 5, which is Lethal 5.
Either one is a pretty good profile.
Yeah, either one is a great profile. And then on top of that, she's got 11 wounds on a 2+ save.
Yeah, she's a tank.
She don't quit. She don't quit. In the heat of battle, she don't miss, you know? Yeah. And so real, just a crazy, this is the leader on most other teams, question mark? Like,
yeah.
Better save, more wounds, though still at 2 APL. And it gets better from there. So on top of being a melee powerhouse and being able to tank shots, she also can do our Lookout Sir. Now, this Lookout Sir is within 2, and that matters for a lot of blast, right? But essentially from within 2, if someone selects a lady this and the jurors within two of them, be like, no, 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 you're not fighting slash shooting them. You're fighting slash shooting me. And so she kind of like steps in and be like, I heard you were talking, you know, I heard you were talking. So now we got
it. I was really confused. I was bored. Look at this. Yeah, I was like, how did Chuck do that?
I didn't do shit. No, I mean, I have to ask. No. Look out, ma'am, is what it is. So
yeah, yeah. Look out, ma'am. Yeah, exactly. This is really good. You're to play this team at a high level. You're going to have to be a little pedantic. I'm sorry. I'll tell you about the pedantry. Where you're gonna have to be well actually. So this is the well actually. So you can avoid a blast shot here if the operative that she's saving doesn't see her. And so you hide from your sister's head and you see their foot. And so when blast happens, you're like, okay, so she's within two, right? You're like, well, actually, blast is visible and within two. And as you can see, this operative doesn't see this operative. And then they like charge her and fight her. And you're like, well, actually, sure, she wasn't in two for blast, but her head sees her foot. So I can actually step in. Anyways, that's the well actually of the juror. I would tell your opponents about that, please, before you play it. Yeah, but that'll be really important. Yeah. But that's really, really important. And most of the time she's going to be stopped. She's going to be, stepping in to save the sensor. So you push the sensor up. We'll talk about that a little more in detail later. Push the sensor up. You put the abjurer next to her and you say, hey, if you touch my friend, you fight me. All of a sudden, because of combat support, abjurer's hitting on twos and you're hitting one worse. Feels bad, man. Then let's do the next part of the wall, which is the Mortis Sanctus. So Mortis Sanctus is our last melee specialist here. So this is the one that was spoiled on Warcom, the big sword lady, 6-inch movement, 3-up save, 9 wounds. She can issue an ultimatum just between us. All right, Chuck, don't tell anyone. you're supposed to, I believe you're supposed to always, accept the challenge. I think, declining the challenge is always mathematically worse because the pre-parry, but don't tell anyone that. Some people, a lot of people are, what do you call it? Sorry, let me explain it a little more than that. But essentially you issue a challenge to someone within 8. That's important. Someone within 8. And, they either accept the challenge and your melee profile gets plus 1 attack, or they decline the challenge and they lose 1 attack from their melee profile. So am I going to get 1 attack on my operative, or are you going to lose attack on your operative? Her attack is a Blessed Broadsword, 4-up, 3+, 4-6, AO, lethal 5, AO, brutal, my goodness. So that's real, real good. She also has Bladed Stance, which is parry first. So essentially she's always going to hit with a lot of dice, and she can parry you out before anything happens, and that'll just leave her on full wounds, which is bad for you, good for her.
Yeah.
Okay, and so that is the melee wall probably, and that's going to be advancing up. Why all three together? You want the sensor on a point most of the time the middle point, to hold things down. You want that sensor to be close to the abjurer because you want people fighting the abjurer, not the sensor. Sensor has a 4-up weapon profile to hit, so she can miss. Not good. And then last, Mortis Sanctus should be next to the abjurer if you can, because she wants to be far up. She wants to issue her challenge, charge the person she issued the challenge with, and have fun. And so the abjurer wants to stop people from fighting her before she can issue her challenge. So your shield lady sits between these two ladies. The mace lady sits, like, let's say to her left. She guards the point, and she has her -1 to hit aura, her injury aura. And then the Mortis Sanctus, our sword lady, is ready to charge into enemy lines. So anyone who comes up and messes with her, the abjurer deals with them. So she can go and be and do a good, you know, just have a fun time in your enemy's lines.
Is this the start of your crazy graph here?
It is the start of my crazy graph.
Okay. I love this image, but when I first saw it, I was like, what the hell is he talking about? But, you know, it's starting to make a little more sense now.
Yeah, we'll get. I don't know how podcast listeners will consume that. Good luck, but I'll try my best. All right. From there, we have the Denuncia, which is an operative that it's kind of our comms. And so what they're able to do is they have real quick 3 up save, 9 wounds. They got a voice of commendation, which is a seek stun on 5 dice. Pretty good. They have a staff of damnation 3-3. Boo. I don't know if 9 operative teams are allowed to have 3-3 damage on their melee profiles. I don't know. She's a little bit of a question mark right now. Is she worth it? But she does 2 things. One is real good. This is her 1 APL ability, Speak Her Deeds. She takes off Inspiring from a lady and gives a benediction to someone else. And so you can imagine she takes off Inspiring from herself, gives a benediction like 3rd APL or Ceaseless to another operative. And then she also has Accusing Exorcist, which is, and this is important, it's important, y'all. Whenever this operative is inspiring, boo, she has to be inspired. That's actually really hard. It's actually really hard to get her inspired, turning point one, to have this happen turning point two. It's possible, but it sucks. When this operative is inspiring, the suspect and eliminate strategic ploy cost 0 if the enemy operative or marker you select is visible or within 6. So if you just see a marker or you see an operative, you can target them for free from across the battle. So it's like seek, use the ploy. Can be really good. It's free punishing on people. So a free ploy is a free ploy. This is 3 free CP, you know? I mean, technically free CP is better than free ploys, you know, for a lot of reasons, but it's 3 free ploys. Can be pretty great.
I've heard a lot of people, like the videos I watched at least, try and like the user superior to inspire this one to like either pass on that benediction or just make sure you hit that ploy.
Yeah, there's one more step to that little combo, but we're very close. Yes. And the other step to that combo was the Reliquarius, which we'll talk about real quick. So the Reliquarius, also really contentious. We're a 9 operative team. She has a 3 up save. She has 9 wounds. She got a bolt pistol, 4 dice, 3 up, 3-4, range 8. Okay, not sure that's allowed. Doesn't seem good enough. She has a Condemner Stake Thrower, 4 dice, 3 up, 2-2. Devastating 1, piercing crits 1, silent anti-psyker. Okay, some teams hate this, by the way. Some teams hate so much what I just said, it's wild. And so, like, versus mid-range teams were a melee team, and then versus hordes, very often with 5 up saves, they take a look at these, like, things, and they're like, oh my god, I hate this. It's just, like, silent shooting across the board, destroying all of their profiles. And so, can be very good, but mostly only into horde or a little bit of chip. And then this is the thing that kind of keeps her warming. She's got 1 leg on the bench, 1 leg off the bench, which is gun butt. 3 dice, this is melee, 3 dice, 3 up, 2-3. What the? 3 attacks, 2-3 on a 9 operative team? Is that allowed? I'm not so sure. She does have some abilities to make up for it, which is she has Icon Bearer, so she counts for 1 more APL if the enemy is within 3. That's real bad, actually. If you tow onto a point, then the enemy can be just like outside 3, because technically that's 4 inches. So like if she tows onto a point, her Icon Bearer doesn't turn on if they also tow onto a point opposite her. Why? I don't know. That's how it is. And then she has Devotion, and this is definitely why you take her. So this is the part that makes all the kind of suspect stuff I said worth it. At the end of each of this operative's activations, if it is inspiring and it controls an objective marker or one of your mission markers, one friendly operative that is visible to and, so this is the only and, visible to and within 6 becomes inspiring. So if she's inspiring and she's contesting a point, holding up the flag, people see her holding up a flag and is like, that's dope. that's some dope stuff over there. I want to do the same. And so always, you're going to have to plan a lot of things. If you bring the relic, turning point one, she must end inspired. She must be on a point, and she must be giving her inspiring to another operative. If that does not happen, turning point one, it is not worth bringing this operative ever. So that must happen. So she will go on your home objective. You will make her inspiring, and she will pass that, or you always leave her at home, always. And so that's the little wrinkle there that you were talking about, Chuck, which is like, who do you give inspiring to? The leader will always give it to the Reliquarius. The Reliquarius will end her action, make someone else inspiring, and then you'll use the Denuncia to take one of the inspirings and give them to someone else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is this, it's going to be like, based on the board you have, and if you can get them there and you can like, you get the visibility, you can like plan this out ahead of time then?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is just a combo you'll always have to do. So I know it's a little repetitive, but I'm just going to repeat it once. This is a combo you always have to do. The leader will give the relic inspiring. The relic then must get onto the point while inspired, pass inspiring to another person, and then from there, the Denuncia takes one of the two inspirings, either on the relic or the one she just inspired, and gives that to someone else as a benediction. And that's what has to happen.
The auto-flagellator is like the one time I think maybe, like, but again, it's still a dice roll, so you can't guarantee it. But it seems like this equipment was meant for the Reliquarius. That way you could try and pop it on her and then have the leader give it to someone else. But then if you fail that dice roll, there goes your game plan, and that can be very bad very quickly.
Yeah, so I think because that happens as operatives activate, you may consider it on the Denuncia.
Yeah.
So if you're going to roll it first time, it would be on the Denuncia. That kind of sucks because she has to always come at the end of the combo we're talking about, leader to relic to Denuncia. But she will never be in combat. She has victim stats in combat. She has a stun, and she gives out a free CP or a free ploy every turn. So you always want to hide her.
Yeah.
She never advances. And so the one of the operatives you can consistently bring and assume they'll never be getting touched is the Denuncia. So she's first target for the auto chat or flagellator. Yeah. And they go.
It feels like their utility, especially that equipment as well, goes up in stuff like loots or anything where you want to be constantly touching the point. Like I'm trying to think of the missions, but the one where you like keep stacking points on it and pull all those points. Loot, of course. Secure a little bit because you just need to tap those 2 points at some point. Transmission, of course, all that good stuff like that.
Yeah, you're probably bringing Auto Flagellator to pass out inspiring in matchups where lots of trading happens fast.
Yeah,
that's the hope. And so, when did those matchups happen? Depends on team, depends on matchup, depends on map. All right, we're almost done. We only have 8 operatives to go through, and we've gone through 6.
Nice,
my goodness. So we have the Insidian Cremator. She's got a hand flamer. Hell yeah. And that is 4 dice, 2 up, 3-3. Range 6, saturate torrent 1. And that's her standard. Cool. 4 dice, 3 up, 3-3. Wait, I thought this is what... Wait, what's this doing here? Isn't this on my Sanctifier team? Wait, what? I thought a Dire Operative team would have something better. All right. Well, that's weird. She has a Hand Flamer Deluge, which is maybe what makes it worth it, which is 4 dice, 2 up, 3-3, range 4, saturate, seek light, torrent 0. So seek light within 4, but you can only select one operative, but you do get torrent, which means look out, you know, Mr. President doesn't work. And you get lethal 5 up while you're in close combat. All right. And then here's the other thing. They're trying to make it work, which is Inspirational Pyre. Once per turning point, when this operative inflicts damage on an enemy operative with either profile of his hand flamer, if that enemy operative wasn't incapacitated, you can use this rule. If you can select one enemy operative within 6 of this operative to become inspiring. Doesn't need visibility. That's cool. Just within 6. But they need to live? Wait, did I read that right? Wait, what's going on, man? So this operative is like, I want to like it. It's worse than the Novitiate Flamers. it's somehow worse than Sanctifier Flamers because it doesn't have Blaze. And so, like, we're kind of struggling here, but we do have a Null Mace, 4 dice, 3 up, 4-4, Shock, Anti-Psyker. Hell yeah. You get Shock, you get Severe. Okay, we're kind of redeeming ourselves here. Like, 9 wounds with damage reduction in combat with a 4-4 Mace. That's pretty great. It's pretty great.
I mean, also, if you get a little bit of, like, a little Martyrdom, you get 3 APL, you get a little Flame, a little Charge, a little... You know,
yeah, a flame and a charge is real good. It's real, real good. So this operative is pretty good. You can take 2 of them. General consensus right now, though I'm still figuring it out myself, is maybe you only ever take one of these gals. Because you kind of don't need to hand out that much inspiring unless the hand flamer profile, 4 dice, 2 up, 3-3, feels crazy against your enemies. Like, it's real, real good. This lady, probably take 1, leave 1 home. We'll see. That's kind of where we're going. And then last is the Insidient Warrior. And this warrior ain't no slouch. This is like a real thing. You're always going to take at least 1, and you might take more. And we'll talk about that. So, 2 APL, 6 move, 3 up save, 9 wounds. She got a bolt pistol. 4 dice, 3 plus, 3-4, range 8. She got Condemned or Stake Thrower, same as the Relic. 4 dice, 3 up, 2-2. Then it gets good with Dev 1, Piercing Crit, Silent, Anti-Psyker. And then she has a Null Mace. 4 dice, 3 up, 4-4. Why don't we just always not take a crim? Like, why don't we just take a criminer every time instead of a warrior? Because of her ability, which is actually wild, which is Inspiring Strikes, or Inspired Strikes. Whenever this operative is inspiring, add 1 to the critical damage stat of its weapons on its data card. Oh, shoot. So you're telling me I always have a 3-5 bolter or a 2-3 stake thrower or a 4-5? Hey, isn't that a good profile? 4-5 Null Mace? Yeah, dude. 4-5 Null Mace goes a lot harder than a 4-4 Null Mace. And depending on your matchup, it goes a lot harder.
Yeah, the Shock alone is a pretty useful keyword to have there, too.
Yeah, absolutely. With Severe, too. Mm-hmm. And so this inspiring thing of, like, when you're inspired, you're always getting +1 on your critical damage, and you're always going to have at least 1 crit because of Severe. So it's a very good combo. It's an incredibly good, like, trooper ability here that we don't always see printed. And so this is, like, really worth considering. At the end of the day, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, do you think you bring any cremators or just like a couple warriors?
Great question. So let's talk about the one box build. The cool part is in the one box build, you get 10 models. So you build 9. So with 10, you build 2 cremators and 2 warriors. And like sometimes you drop a war or sometimes you drop a cremator for a warrior. Maybe it's like terrible for whatever reason, you would drop 2 and you have 3 warriors, or yeah, in which case you start needing another box. I think this is what I've been saying. This is for normal people a one box build. For competitive sweats, you'll need 1 more operative. And for crazy people, you will want 13 operatives, so you want to add 3, and they will be warriors.
You're taking 13 then.
Yeah, you know it. So in rare matchups, you might replace the Denuncia, and you might also replace the Censor. The Censor is a 4-up melee with injury aura. This is good until you're fighting a shooting horde who never wants to fight you. Mm-hmm. In which case, the warrior actually does all the jobs that this operative would do a little bit better.
Yeah,
and so you might drop the Censor, you might drop the Denuncia. I don't know, man. You may or may not drop the Relic. It's getting hard. Maybe, maybe not. But most of the time, you're going to be absolutely fine bringing either 2 cremators or 2 warriors and 1 cremator and just kind of moving back and forth from there. And so that's roughly the one box build. You kind of get silly with it. You can't imagine, you might want to drop all the cremators. So that's why you would have an 11th to bring 3 warriors. But like most of the time that won't happen. And then you can get very silly if you think about dropping into like shooting hordes, the Mace Lady. And then the Relic, I mean, seems so good. Giving out Inspiring, certainly great, unless you know you're going to be charging a lot. There are like some matchups where you think you'll always be charging. And so you'll have Inspiring regardless. It doesn't really matter. I think those are rare. I don't even know what those matchups are yet, though I do think they probably exist. And so you start to like get more and more warriors, but this is like single digit matchups. You'll never want to, no one should really concern themselves with that.
So Zach, like we've gone through the team. How have you, you said you played a few games so far. How have your, how have your games gone? What's your feel on the team so far? I know you've been waiting for a while.
Yeah, I will say generally this team plays great. It's a very fun play experience. You know, I mained Novitiates. That's a relatively involved team. I mained Sanctifiers after their changers. They're incredibly hard to pilot. Rewarding, fun, good, but they're so hard to pilot that it's like really kind of playing solitaire over on your side of the map. This team is rad. You get to go, you want things to die, which is awesome. So awesome to want things to die in kill team. A lot of people have actually said this is kind of like a blooded team because you want like thing, you want to be passing out blooded tokens or whatever.
So now we're gonna have to deal with you and Brandon playing the hell out of this team.
It's very, very fun to play. It's all pretty obvious over the board what's happening. You're not keeping track of a bunch of weird stuff. Like for Sanctifiers, my God, the aura invisibility was driving me insane. For Novitiates, a whole pool of dice doing something over there where I have to constantly be doing math at the back of my head. Mm-hmm. Rough. This one, I just get to have fun on the table and they perform really well. I did like a very basic tier list recently before the data slate. So this means nothing. It'll change. I put this team at like B, though I could see A, certainly out of S in my opinion. But like, you're going to have fun. This isn't going to hold you back in any way from competitive play. It's real good. Yeah.
So if you're going to put them on like a tier list for like skill level or the challenge of the team or what it takes to run this team. So if you have like say Angels of Death are in, right in the middle, and you have maybe like the where is this team fall as far as like if you were gonna, if somebody's like, hey, I want to play guild team, I got this box, would you
can definitely give them this team. That's the great part, is I've been a sister's ambassador to the kill team hobby, and it's been rough because like telling people how Novitiates work, you can see their eyes glaze over and they're like, oh gosh, really? Sanctifiers very much kind of same. This one lower half doesn't mean it's like easy to play. You'll just get it first time. There's a really fun skill ceiling where you can start to juice it, but just to play it, to enjoy it and have a good time and not being like constantly being like, what and then what and then what, this team is I think in one of the best sweet spots in the game. So I'd say like right in between, maybe a slightly towards the AOD half. But then once you start juicing it, you know, there are a lot of these niche rule interactions that you can start to really push. So, you know, there's room for skill expression, but just to start the team and start having fun, a lot easier, which I love. Yeah.
Yeah. I played against Novitiates quite a few times and I never understood them ever. So I sold my Novitiates to Jeremy Spake, the beautiful Jeremy Spake. Yeah, we talked about him last week. sorry, Jeremy.
He was happy with it. Don't say sorry.
Oh yeah, he was happy to a point. I'm excited to get this team. Like I said, we're doing Connor and I both doing Murder Wing like kit bashes, but I also feel like this is gonna be a really fun team. I'm just gonna build these straight out of the box. So do you have If I'm building them straight out of the box, I got 10 operatives. You said one of the warriors and one of the cremators?
Two and two.
So
you have enough. Yeah, since you have 10, you have enough for one extra. Then you'll build two warriors, you'll build two cremators. I think that's the instructions in the box. Simple. You just follow the box instructions. We did it.
That's good. We did it. You know, like Murder Wing, where it's like you need like three boxes apparently to build the entire roster or something. So.
Or just the Murder Wing box, and then you pick up Mark II Assault Marines. And they look way cooler in the poses, too, because they're not doing the stupid standing on a rock thing.
Mm. Tactical rocks are the shit.
No, they're stupid. I hate them. I'd rather go back to the flying stands, honestly.
That's my only beef with the Insidians. Is there any tactical rocks in this box? I mean, come on.
No, I don't think the cremator has one, which is interesting. I thought it, yeah, I thought it would, but it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah. D tier for me, no
tactical. Yeah, that's the important thing for a tier list. How many tactical? Well, see, I, like, even the Raptors aren't tactical rocks. Like, the tactical rock is like so you can stand taller. Those guys are like jumping off little pillars of
rocks. It's tactical rock. It's all tactical.
No, it's not. It's different than a tactical rock.
So, wait, Lieutenant Dias is like not jumping off a tactical rock. It's just like a. Is that what you're telling me?
I don't know the model off the top of my head. Give me
get him. Get him, Chuck.
Yeah, got you.
No. Which, his new model?
Not the new model where he's standing there with a fucking chainsaw in the ground.
Oh, you mean the one,
where he's like, the weird one where he's
like. Oh, yeah. Like, okay. Yeah. No, that's a tactical rock. He's doing a dumb pose, but that's a tactical rock.
Thank you.
But the Raptors aren't tactical rocks. And same with the assault intercessors on jetpacks. Or
they're all
tactical. Yeah, how dare you?
Those are too tall to be tactical rocks.
Yeah. Zach, any teams that you like, you going into this with the Insidians that you're like, oh, I don't want to fucking play them because they're just going to shut them down? Or you just like, you feel like they got the toolbox?
So far what I've noticed is any teams with a high wound pool that do chip damage are a little scary.
Okay.
And so one team that like might come to mind is Raveners as well. They like anything that can chip to take away the damage reduction is real, real rough. And then Murderwing, like you said, it's wild to me that this team was paired with them. It very much like they might be the perfect counter because the Insidians gain their benefits from their team primarily by charging. And so much of the Murderwing denies the first initial charge.
Yeah.
So it's like possible. You have to be like on Tomb World, there's some play with like narrow stuff, like where you can kind of have a game if dice go really your way. But like on Vulcus, like, I don't know. Like, so anything that does a lot of chip, I think they struggle with. And anything with a high wound pool. And if you have both of those, I think it becomes quite a challenge. Yeah.
Is there any teams though that you're like, if you roll up to a table against them, you're like, done. I'm done. It's over.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the elf teams, though, I wonder about Mandrakes because they have some like interesting play, but a lot of the other elf teams, it's real rough. Just like that 4/4 damage with shock, and like you have the +1 inch, like you got the extra operative, like versus Blades of Cain or something. That seems real rough. Most mid-range teams, like I think there are some mid-range teams like Mandrakes, Goremongers, Felgor. Those might have like a pretty interesting game. And then like some of them seems real, 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 real rough. Because you just like show up, you have damage reduction in melee. You have a hard time like killing them in melee. When you finally do, they're like buffing people in the back. And with the strike on death, you're just always trading down. And so that can be hard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. What do you I was going to say, Zach, you know, we're talking matchups. What do you think about the two boogeymen of Canoptic and Space Wolves? How do they, like Canoptic, I'm like,
I think
still seems rough because they just don't have like high remove damage. And Canoptic doesn't care about damage anyways.
Yeah, I think Canoptic remains a problem. We'll see after the beta.
Yeah, tomorrow,
hopefully. Town stay slate might be nothing. But currently, as they stand, I think it's pretty hard. You know, Canoptic reduced charge range. We buff charge range, still leaves us in the middle. And then, like, with the Warriors, how the Warriors currently are for that team, they come back so often. You don't really have a way to go out and touch them very much. Yeah. They just fall back, shoot you, you're dead. They have a lot of chip with their leader and their whatever ability. So they also are in the same thing of like high wound count, lots of chip damage team. And with chip, even the Tomb Quarrel or melee becomes scary for this team, depending on how much they're able to chip in. That seems rough. For Wolf Scouts, I haven't played it, but I think probably good. Honestly, probably an okay matchup. I don't know if we're favored, but it's probably not just show up and lose, which is pretty cool. Those are, but honestly, in my own mind, again, whatever, this changed 24 hours, but right now, the boogeyman for me, Murder Wing, Canoptic, Wolf Scouts, you know, one out of three. It ain't bad. You show up to the other two, I think you're kind of losing most of the time, given unless you have like really good map, really good mission, dice kind of go your way, you kind of have a game. But aside from that, you know, you're fighting from behind a lot of the time. Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, Zach, any like final thoughts? And, you know, we've had the rules for like 4 days. Any final thoughts so far on the Celestine Incidians?
Yeah,
they're the favorite, your favorite team ever, and you're gonna.
They are my favorite team ever.
They get rotated.
And I will play them until they get rotated. You know, this has all just been the prequel between the first Kill Team that's come out, in my opinion. This is great. I love them. That said, I wanted to do two things. One, I'm going to talk through Turning Point 1 step by step.
Okay.
Just so people can understand how to set up this team. Once you understand Turning Point 1, from there, you're going to be able to enjoy this team. So this is the part you might want to play more than once and really think about it. And then two, I also had a couple of questions that I got asked that I just wanted to field before I take off. But first, Turning Point 1. All right. So I'm just going to go over... a turning point that like makes it so you can set up to have a good game going into turning point 2. You're not going to win turning point 1, obviously. And you're going to have to do a lot of different stuff versus a lot of different teams from where we end. But essentially, what I want you to think about is the shield, the mace, and the sword ladies. They're going to stick together probably most of the time. And the shield lady is going to want to try to protect the mace lady while the mace lady covers with the -1 aura. Anyone who's going to charge sword lady. It's almost like a daisy chain. And so you could even be, honestly, depending, your first three activations might be shield lady goes up, sensor lady goes up within two of shield lady, and then sword lady is a little bit behind mace lady. Sorry. Shield lady's be little, or sorry, yeah, yeah. The sword lady's a little behind mace lady, so if she gets charged, -1 attack. And so those three are your little melee wall. You're putting them up. Your goal is mace lady protects a point, probably the midpoint, and then sword lady is going to be far enough up but safe that she wants to issue a challenge turning point 2. Honestly, you can play that your first three activations most of the time, as long as you remain safe behind cover. They're like going and doing that wall thing. Cool. Then you have six other activations. We're just going to get the three important ones out of the way, which is your leader's going to go. Your leader's going to give inspiration to your relic. And then she's going to go somewhere kind of like midfield because she might snipe someone who's trying to be annoying next turn. She's going to use her silence. So get her not on advantage, but like someplace she can move and shoot down a lane or something. So that's where she ends. So gives a relic inspiration. She gets a place where you can probably be annoying shooting far across the map next turn. Then the relic's going to go and she's going to get onto your home point. Must be on your home point. So she is inspired. She moves to your home point. She gives inspiration. I recommend she gives inspiration to your Denuncia somewhere. But you can have her give inspiration to either one of the warriors, the Crimiters. And then your Denuncia goes, rips inspiration. I would recommend to start, she rips inspiration away from either herself, because you gave it to her with the relic, or the Crimiter or warrior. So keep the relic with the inspiration, rip off that, give a benediction. I recommend to start out, I'd be given a 3 APL benediction to one of the warriors or the Crimiters. So that's turn one. What that should mean is your melee operatives are advancing to contest the mid objective. Your relic is probably protecting your home objective with at least one other warrior. Your Denuncia is kind of in the middle of it all. She can see operatives, so she can give out the free ploy. And then your leader's ready to shoot next turn. And that is the turning point one setup. Sorry, that's a lot. But that's like, if you're able to do that, then... you're able to have like a fun turn 2, 3, 4. And you don't have to worry about what is the little puzzle at the start of the game to set up well to play the rest of the game.
And you have actually, you've diagrammed this all out. So like you're listening through this, I will put it up on the video here, or we'll have Max throw it up on the Instagram so you can kind of like, and actually like when you're looking at it, just hearing it is one thing, but looking at it, it makes even more sense. So, Zach, thank you for the diagram, but,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No,
that makes sense. All right. And then you've got like the melee wall though, and then you've got the like the leader sliding over to get the relic, who's on the back point. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Then I had some questions. Just wanted to field them. So this is from the Command Point Discord. I just like was able to post and say it's gonna go on. So they wanted to hear in depth. So first question is from It's Naga. Is let's see. What does TP1 look like for this team? Is there a general consensus early on when not a lot is happening? Who should be receiving inspiring and benedictions? I think we went over that, right? Essentially, you always have to have the relic be inspired. She's always going to pass it from there. The Denuncia needs to set up someplace where she's going to get a free CP. You can either decide to keep her inspiring for a free CP or give her inspiring away for a benediction. And if you're going to give a benediction away, I'd recommend to start, give 3 APL to either a warrior cremator so they can move, dash, shoot, or they can do a mission action or something like that. Next one, man, Fragrelli. There's a lot of E's and a lot of weird stuff. Realistically, how many warriors does one need? I think we talked about that, but like, hey, normal people will have 2. Crazy sweaty people will have 3. Insane people might have up to 4 or even 5 warriors, but that gets wild and you probably don't need them. And then Cody asks, best setup for multi-inspiration, setting up decent TP2 threats plans, preferred TAC op. Oh, we didn't talk about TAC ops. Yeah, good one. So, I mean, you can't be inspired multiple times, so that sucks. But essentially, you know, I would say try to pass out inspiration to the melee operatives so they can get value as they die using the strike on death. So in a KG matchup, turning point 2, you're going to have your leader pushing inspiration onto operatives that you think will be dying that turn. So they can start benedicting behind them and get the benefits of inspiration while they're fighting. And then I think we went over some plans. I think the general consensus is you want them to come to you because the longer you can be giving out inspiration, the better. So TP2 stays kind of quiet if you can manage it. And then you start going nuts with your melee operatives and move dashing turning point 3 to really pass midboard, get into their lines. Preferred TAC ops. I think Martyrs is unfortunately not playable if your opponent knows you're playing Martyrs or may guess. It's only a max 4 TAC op, which will lose you the game a lot of the time. So if nothing dies turning point 2, you can't score Martyr. You're only maxing 4. Unfortunately, that's like not a winning plan. Doesn't always happen, but it can happen. So I'd stay away from that, even though it's like kind of rare. That leaves us with Plant Banner, which is good, and Envoy if you out-activate. Awesome. You'll use Dominate versus Hordes most likely. You'll never use Sweep and Clear because it's bad. At some point, you use Route. I haven't figured it out yet, but I think I'd stay with those 3. To start, I would just use Plant Banner to learn the team and maybe Dominate if you're versus something with 11 or more operatives.
Plant Banner is just so god dang good. I think it's just so reliable that you take it almost every time.
Yeah, it's really good. Then Finkenelf asks, who gets the inspiring buff from your leader and icon bearer turns 1 and 2? Who gets what benedictions from the comms lady 1 and 2? Generally speaking, I'm not sure if these things are, you know, are matchup, map, and mission dependent. They are matchup, map, mission dependent. Generally, I would start giving out early APL 3 benedictions to operatives with guns. What gun is best will depend on the map, mission, and matchup. And then if you think someone's really going to start charging you and you're going to have to fight on your point or on the home objective melee starting turn 2, you can start to consider giving out Wrath with those operatives at the beginning of turn two.
I think probably the shield lady for Ceaseless, at least to me, this like is the first one, considering she's got some of the higher damage and just effects on the team.
Yeah, shield lady is a real, I mean, they're all
good. They're all good, but just like, it's a power weapon, you know? It's like, I always want that thing rolling for fives and sixes.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And then another one is like, or do you give it to the mace operative because they're 5/5, but they're 4+. And so it's like a little, it
makes them a little more reliable.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's all the questions that I got. Thanks for sending in questions. I hope I fielded them. You know, we're also pretty dang early into all this. I'm sure a lot of this will change. And, you know, I'd love for y'all to have me back, maybe. And I can tell you.
When you win one of these upcoming tournaments with them, I'm sure we'll have to have you back and be like, Zach, what's the secret sauce that we have just yet?
Yeah, we got the Clash coming up in March. You got any, Zach, anything on your calendar before that?
Before March, no, I don't think. Well, right now we're doing the CPTS team tournament, so that's pretty fun. Yeah. Trying to figure out what team to bring is a really cool. I enjoy it. This is like my third or fourth team event, and so it's pretty cool to see how that's going. Yeah. But aside from that, now first thing will be Clash, and then I'm hoping I actually won't be attending Clash as a player. We're seeing we might be streaming Clash. Similar to what we did at Killscream.
Nice, that's awesome. Oh, nice. Yeah. Well, yeah, we Killscream, God, what is it? Five? Killscream 5 is coming up this year. Yeah.
Obviously. We haven't mentioned it yet.
Yeah, stream that for us. We did find out we have two golden tickets again this year for Killscream 5. So.
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
So that's going to be October 23rd, 24th, 25th here in Portland. But yeah, awesome. Zach, thank you so much for coming to break down the team. I know you were so excited for them. We to have you on for them. So, and yes, we'd love to have you back. And like, I'd love to have you like come and recap what worked and what didn't after you break them down a little
review
more.
My takes after I have like a game set.
I mean, you only had like 300 games in with the novitiate, so you'll probably get a couple hundred with these, so disregarding dice.com is where you can find Zach and his amazing photography. You're gonna have, I know you got some on your, you're on YouTube as well too. And you were teasing a little like a screenshot. Are you gonna be doing deep dive on YouTube for them or some?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So we will be setting up a deep dive on Sisters. Probably a few more games till that happens, but there'll be a one box build guide coming that'll tell everyone how to put all the things together and kit bashes if they want to do them. And then I'll also do a YouTube video. And so you'll find that on the YouTube, and then you'll find the build guide and a little bit of how to play, like an intro tutorial similar to the one that's up for novitiates. And that'll be on disregardingdice.com. I'm very excited to get those out.
Yeah. If you've been to a tournament where Zach's at, you've probably got some amazing photography. You made my Rekka crew look a million times better. So disregardingdice.com. Connor, you're at Spanaway and everything. Yeah, Tyler, rest in peace.
Happy birthday, Tyler. That he's not dead.
Happy birthday,
Tyler.
His
birthday was yesterday, actually.
Well, it's his birthday celebration.
He's just it's not even that. He's just unpacking. He moved. So he's Tyler's got, if you've noticed, if you watched the videos over the last couple weeks, you can see the less and less shit in the background for Tyler. So he's just working on moving now. But at Lowbrow Minis on Instagram, dicehard.bigcartel.com. You can find us at VoxCascadia Podcast, patreon.com/VoxCascadiaPodcast on Patreon. If you want to see the after show, which Zach, you can hang around for the after show, talk some shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, everybody, thank you for listening. Connor, can you do the Tyler sign off?
We love you. Good night.